Okay, we're going to begin the questioning again with World War II. World War II, you were back in Stratford. You were teaching in Bridgeport, right? Did anybody in your family participate in World War II?
Yes, I had. Let's see. My brother, World War II. My brother Roy. Now, tell me, what was the areas that they were located in when they were in World War II?
In Europe, in Italy, Germany, England.
My brother Alonzo was located in France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be World War II.
Mm-hmm. France.
Mm-hmm.
Willie was in World War I. Alonzo in World War II. I was just a little girl, I think Willie and Alonzo were in World War I. And then Roy was in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my brother Willie, I told you about yesterday, that died.
Yes.
And didn't come back home.
Yes.
So that was the four that were in service altogether.
Yes.
Now the you're speaking of the Depression age.
No, it was after the Depression, during the presidency of Roosevelt.
Oh.
You know, where they had rationing and...
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I understand. I think that was... I must have been teaching then.
You were.
If I was, I was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because they had the USO centers,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was one of the, what did they call the girls or the teachers, the ladies that went in to help entertain the boys at these centers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Bowling Green, Virginia at Union High School. And the USO center was on a parcel of land that was adjoining our campus.
Mm-hmm.
So on weekends we'd go over and help boys, you know, entertaining them, and we didn't have to do anything as far as food was concerned because they furnished their own food.
Mm-hmm. All right, so in effect now, you had two brothers in the service, and then you participated by being a member of the USO.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there anything that stands out in your mind about this, the period of World War II?
Yes, I took a course in auto mechanics. The women were taught how to repair their own cars and so forth. And I had a car that I drove back and forth from here to Virginia. So I took the course. And I used to change my own tires, spark plugs, and so forth in the car.
Oh.
That's what we did. They had women being trained for mechanics because so many of the men were going away and they didn't have men to do the service that mm-hmm. they would need.
Yeah. Is there any particular way that the war affected your family? Let's see, the shortage of food or, anxiety over your brothers that were in there or something?
Well, because each one of my brothers who went in service, they made an allotment to my mother, a monthly allotment. And in that way, to tell the truth, at that time we didn't suffer hardship as far as food was concerned, because my mother received this help from my brothers, as well as she worked. She had good work, hard job, not steady job.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how they used to have to wash, to taking washings and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
She'd do that. She didn't go away from home too much to work, but they would bring things, the clothes to her, and she washed them and ironed them. And at the end of the week, the little money they got really wasn't much,
mm-hmm.
but it was helpful.
Did you moved? You moved back to Bridgeport during the war period. It was during World War II.
Because 45. Yes, I did. Because I'll never forget my brother Roy. Wrote my mother a letter every day. Every day he mailed her a letter. And he was always hoping and just praying that he would get back home. I guess if I had an opportunity and had gone go through my mother's things that may still be over next door, or even in some of the boxes and things that I might have brought when I came, I'd probably find some cards and I'd find the letters that he wrote her every day, mm-hmm. every blessed day, praying and hoping that he'd get home safe. That's what he said to my mother in the letters. If I ever come home, Mom, I'm not ever coming back. Mm. And of course, he suffered from the war. He was shell shocked when he came home. And every time he'd hear a car backfire, he'd jump out of the bed. And he had brought his little trunk, the wooden trunk they had. And then they had these shrapnels or something.
Shrapnel.
That they would use, you know.
Oh, that bayonet?
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he'd jump out of the bed at night, and when he'd hear a car, and he'd say, go get them, you know. That's the way he talked. And it disturbed him so much until we finally had to have him see the doctor so they could give him something for his nerves. And he wasn't alone because we had another friend who was the same way until they both eventually in the Veterans Hospital in New Haven.
Did they get well?
He got well enough to come home and stay, but he couldn't go back to work or anything like that because he had a bad leg. I guess he, from injury he had over there, and so eventually his leg was amputated, and he stayed with me then until he died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he stayed right here with me.
So, all in all, World War II had quite an impact on your family then.
Oh, yes, it did.
Now, let's talk about things that took place in Bridgeport. How did World War II affect Bridgeport? Were there more jobs or?
Now, let's see. Well, I think, the boys who did came home, I think they had the privilege of getting better jobs. I think they did. Because many of them, they got jobs in the factories, the industries, and so forth. And one of my brothers worked for where they make the guns and stuff, Remington Arms.
Mm-hmm.
Remington Arms over on Barnum Avenue. One mm-hmm. of them worked there for quite a few years
mm-hmm.
afterwards.
Yeah, so, and you think that this was a result of World War II?
Well, yes,
more
I had
jobs
another
opening
brother
up.
Who worked for he didn't go to a war, this one, the youngest brother.
No,
he didn't go. But he worked at the Tylo Roofing Company up until he retired about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's gone too, but not from the result of that.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just thinking usually wars initiate social change and changes in people's attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what that's what I'm talking about as a result of the war. Did more jobs open up for blacks?
That's what I thought. Uh-huh. Yes, because before that there weren't many men, there weren't many blacks who were in these industries.
Mm-hmm.
And down on Connecticut Avenue there, what's the name of that big place down there? Mm-hmm. On Connecticut Avenue, that's where they hired many of the young black men. And the United Illuminating Company down by Seaside Park, oh, they began hiring more blacks, because my husband's brother and my husband came up here. They got jobs down there because my husband was in World War. My goodness.
Two?
Mm-hmm. What war was he in?
Probably he would have to be in two.
Yeah, I know he didn't go to New Guinea. Mm-hmm. Oh, because he was in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Italy because he can speak Italian just as well as any Italian you want to meet.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he can. He can because we... Oh, I don't want to say that.
Would you... You're saying that you brought this home over here. Do you think that after World War II, more blacks were able to buy homes?
Well, ever since the World War II, it seems as though there are about 10 times more blacks over here now than there ever was. There weren't many black people around in this area. There were mostly Italians, and even going beyond South Avenue, going down toward Lordship, they were building homes down there. And down that area, there's as many blacks as there are white.
Mm-hmm.
They were very... The population has almost doubled around the whole area.
Yes.
Since World War II.
Uh-huh. Do you think that they had more money after?
Well, more jobs were open for them. The engineer down at Sikorsky's is a black man, a very dear friend of ours, and they never before had it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's the engineer down there.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many of them work down there now that never worked down there before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are many more blacks.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this caused that World War II caused black neighborhoods to change as such? To develop?
Well, I'm sure, because in the last, I'd say, 15 or 20 years, the population has tripled.
Mm-hmm.
In all of this area of Stratford, from down Lordship, as far as down here to the water, Housatonic River, it comes right down that way,
mm-hmm.
and as far back as you can go, and all up as far as Stratford Avenue, all of this area, I'm pretty sure it has tripled.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
What about the population of black teachers in the city of Bridgeport?
Oh.
After World War II. Did that increase?
Oh yes, it certainly did. We had more coming from the South.
More teachers?
Oh, yes. In fact, most of the black teachers in Bridgeport came from the South, most of them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there was a great influx of them at that period after World War II?
I think so, because... I couldn't begin to name...
I don't expect you to.
But I know after they found out that they could get jobs up here, that's when they began to come this way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't really know, and I didn't know myself as one as they did to me. Asked my mother, why are you sending her down to college for it? She can't get any job up here. That was before I went.
Really?
My mother was working for her. My mother worked for her. And after I finished high school, and my mother, she asked my mother, what was I going to do? And my mother said she wants to go away to college and she wants to be a teacher. because she said, well, what is she going to do? What are you sending to college for? She can't get a job up here. Now, my mother's standing in the kitchen.
That's a lot of nerve, huh?
But I went.
And you did work.
And I came back, and I said, Mama, when I finish, I said, I get a job, you come out of her kitchen. And my mother came out of her kitchen.
That's good.
She certainly did.
Did you get married after this time, after World War II?
Oh, no. Let's see, how long did I go? 34. And I stayed down 11 years old. I guess I... see, I got married in 1952. I can't even remember the heck.
Well, that's good. That's good. So
I
that was a good while after.
I wasn't any chippy, I'll tell you that. I was very... I was up in my 30s.
Yes.
And I didn't have marriage on my mind.
Oh, this is really unusual.
Because I could have gotten married while I was down there in school if I wanted to. But I wasn't ready to be married.
Now, after World War II, do you think that the role of the church in people's lives changed by this
what
time?
What do you mean, inside of in population or in activity? Or
yes, and the kinds of activities it provided
for
the black community.
Yes, there was a big influx of newcomers, people who settled in the area, and even in Bridgeport and Stratford. And people, yes, more people came, and they made the choice for the church they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And the church began to provide more activities and, they provided more opportunities for the younger people by getting them into into the opportunities that the white children had. They can go to any YWCA they want to now. Before they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And they could go they can go to any of the recreational centers or the places of what we say, improvement in their activities. Mm-hmm. There's no color barrier. Mm-hmm. Not in the last, I should say, about 50 to 20 years.
Okay. Now, did that happen after World War? Had that happened before the social upheaval of the 60s?
Of the 60s. Not to a great extent, no, because now I can say this, the person that integrated the YMCA in Bridgeport was a minister, a black minister, and he, I wish I could think now how he did. However, he integrated the black and the white. Mm-hmm. So that the YMCA is the YMCA for black and white ever since then. That's been about, I should say around at least about 35 or 36 years. Because I've been married 31 years. Mm-hmm. And he married us.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that he had, I was down there last week. And I just drove down to see his wife. Mm-hmm. New Jersey.
Yes.
He has a stack of awards. They're just wonderful.
I didn't know
that much about him when I am responsible for him coming to First Baptist Church to serve us when we needed a pastor.
So he was here, he was serving as minister of First Baptist when he did all of this?
When he integrated,
uh-huh.
He did that before he became minister.
Oh.
Yeah, he gave up his job at the YMCA when we needed a minister. And being a friend of mine, I approached him one day. I was chairman of the trustee board at our church. And when I came out of school, I was at Wheeler School. And when I come out of school, his house was 3 doors from my school. And I always stop by or go in at noon hour. Mm-hmm. And we talk about different things, you know. And he was a wonderful man. He was realistic. Mm-hmm. And so when I began
what
to tell him.
What was his name?
Homer J. Tucker. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to show you his picture in one of my books. And when we needed a pastor, and I was talking to him, I don't know if I really knew that he was a minister. And maybe I did too, but anyway, he was not, in that time, he was not serving in the church. He was just working at the YMCA. And I said, oh, gee, I said, Reverend Tucker, you know, we need a church, a pastor. And I said, since you minister, I said, how about coming and helping us out until we can get one? And he thought it over, and I brought it to the church, and he came to us, girl, and that, and he was wonderful. Mm-hmm. He really was wonderful. He had more people coming and going. And see, he was just a human being. He didn't give up everything among the people that he had worked with, the white people, just for us. Mm-hmm. He brought more of them into us. Mm-hmm. By coming himself, and they followed him.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was a wonderful man, believe me.
He sounds like him.
But then somebody else wanted him because they needed one too. And he helped us secure the minister we had. Mm-hmm. Because I told him, I said, we have to get a pastor on Johnson. I said, I don't know which way we're going yet, but we will know in a few days. I said, so if you know of any, he said, I said, if you know of any that you think we might be interested in or you think would be good for us, I said, please let us know. Mm-hmm. And so we can get a minister. And so he told us, we had a meeting, he told us about Reverend Johnson. He was a young minister, and he felt that he would be good for us to give him a chance. So he did. Mm-hmm. And then from then on, Reverend Johnson, but I'm a minister, our membership has grown, so we have to keep expanding the church.
Yes.
That's what it has. We, of course, they had a fire. That was way back from my aunt, the day of my aunt's funeral. And we remodeled the church then. But since then, we've remodeled it twice, rebuilt it because it was so small. And it looks like we're getting ready to rebuild it again. And it's because so many people came this way to get jobs, and they were successful getting jobs. They were tired working, you know, doing
doing service jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we had an influx of it.
Mm-hmm. What role do you think the NAACP played in the social changes that took place in the 40s and 50s?
Well, let me see.
You worked with them, didn't you?
I certainly did. I was on the executive board for them. I was there. They organized in my aunt's house. I will show you something.
This is the uncle that had his business here.
Oh yes.
So
yes.
He helped found First Baptist,
and he helped
organize the first NAACP in this area.
I was right there.
You were at the
I point. Was right there in that house, and from then on I became a member of that NAACP. I served on that executive board.
Did they have any walk-ins or sit-ins or stuff that you participated in to get things going here?
Walk-ins? Oh, they have them. Yes, but unfortunately, even before I got married, but I didn't know I had arthritis because I never had the pain. But so very often I'd give away in my knees, and sometimes I'd kind of fall. Uh-huh. But they never pained me.
Uh-huh.
I never had it, and I couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
But I had, what was I going to say? Oh, yes, after a while, my hands began to pain me so. They would double up, and oh, they pained so badly. Then one Sunday morning, another young minister's father was here from Florida, so they were courteous enough to give him an opportunity to speak. And Alpheus didn't know why I wasn't at church, because I was the secretary of the church. And he and I, he was, I was financial secretary, and he was the
treasurer.
Yeah, but we switched around because he said I could speak better than he did. Anyway, to make a long story short, when his father came up, and that morning I wasn't at church, and he knew something was wrong, because I never missed church, but he and I were just like that. We'd get together for things that we had to do for church and all. He came and brought his father, who was a minister, to my mother's house. And these hands were old, and were so severely painful, and it was the first time it had happened to me. And he said, I knew something was wrong. He said that Bessie didn't come to church this morning. And my mother said she couldn't do anything. My hands were so painful. And we were, his father spoke up and said, well, what are you doing about it? And just sort of put some liniment on it, and that was it. But he said, you know, I think you better take her up to the hospital, to the emergency. Now, mind you, he and his son went to take me, because my sister wasn't here then. She was working away, and there was nobody there to drive. And he took me, and that's when they kept me there until they found out what it was. And ever since then, I've had it. That was before I got married. Right, mm-hmm. And then I got it so bad in my knees and all, mm-hmm. And in my feet. But going to just practical doctors, see, not a specialist. I was taking just pills and heal the pain, but it wasn't treating my joints. Mm-hmm. So that's why I got to be so bad, and I've had it ever since.
So that kept you from participating in the marches and
yes,
things that the NAACP
right.
had.
Yes, in those mm-hmm. activities. But it didn't stop me from going until it became so bad. That's why I said I just decided I'd give up and not even try to teach because of this, a cataract, and also that. And I know how children are.
Mm-hmm. Why was the NAACP marching?
At that time, let me see. Why were they marching at that time? Was it for food or what?
Jobs.
Hmm.
Jobs.
I'm trying to think now. It's been so long.
Did they have to integrate places during this time? Were they trying to get you to be
allowed?
Well,
I think they were trying to get
more places, public places open to you.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was one of the reasons. I'm trying to think now, back and see. Mm-hmm. I think it more or less was for the purpose of having, just seeing that more jobs were open for the black people.
Mm-hmm.
And then more, let's see now. I'm pretty sure that was the biggest thing, because jobs were, that must have been the major
mm-hmm.
purpose of having mm-hmm. walkers on.
So this was back in the late 40s then, huh?
Yes, but they weren't, they didn't, I don't think they put as much emphasis on it then as they do now.
Uh-huh.
I really don't put that much emphasis on it. It was more or less in the various areas, not all going to one point at one place. I think it more or less was something that was going on throughout the country, wherever there were branches of the NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the year I went to Nashville, when they had it there. And while they were there, they did march.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They marched, yeah.
What did they do to get more voters?
Well, truthfully speaking, that probably was part of it.
Part of the program, too, huh?
Yes, it was part of the program, too. I'm trying to think what... yes, because Negroes didn't vote very much then.
Mm-hmm.
What were they voting for? They figured every office, every political office, every city office was opened up for the white man. We didn't have any black men on any of these, like the city council. Now we have a black belt. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness gracious.
Are you talking about the city? You're not talking.
Newton.
Yes.
One of my former students.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is too. Newton. Mm-hmm.